Marini's Media.
As the Chairboys take their seat at the EFL's top table, we salute Wickham. And what about Wigan? Crisis schmisis. The Latics, as great as Hull, are horrible in DW demolition. We'll tell Norwich something about grass and its greenness and generate some clickbait by announcing that Pep, quote-tet, has left Birmingham City. This is the Totally Football League Show. Hey gang, Matt Davis Adams here. Hope you're well. I'm here, virtually, with producer Abby and my two EFL experts. Sam Parkin played for 10 EFL clubs and is in the Swindon Town Hall of Fame. Hi Sam, you okay, hun? Re-Owen Doyle swapping Swindon for Bolton?
Oh, well, it's not great, is it? Really upsetting, no. But you know, we will always have the memories, and he's a good 60 short of how many I plundered.
And that is the real quiz. Adrian Clark swung in perfectly flighted crosses for Arsenal, Southend, Stevenage and more. He's here too. Hello, Adrian.
Yeah, hi, Matt.
Don't worry, I'll be quizzing the boys on their careers later in the show. But let's get to the football, specifically those wonderful Wanderers.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill.
Huge kick from Allsop. Moore, let it go. Oh, and a collision there between keeper and Onyedinma, and that is a penalty to Wickham. Joe Jacobson with a penalty for Wickham. This to put them on the brink of Championship football for next season. And they are on the brink of Championship football for next season.
Hold on. Tell me what we did, because I don't know what we did. Tell me what we just did.
Well, you got yourself a place in the Championship.
I don't think they heard you in the back. Tell me what we did.
You got yourself a place in the Championship.
Pull up a chair, boys, and take your seat at the Championship table. Congratulations to Gareth Ainsworth and his history makers. Wickham Wanderers are in the Championship.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if you're in any way associated with Wickham Wanderers, who are, for the first time, as we've been hearing, a Championship club. A header from Anthony Stewart and a penalty from Joe Jacobson secured a 2-1 win over Oxford United and means that the team who started the season among the favourites for relegation end it with promotion. Sam, you were there just from watching on the TV. It had the feel of a fairly momentous occasion. How was it from the stands?
Yeah, I didn't think it was a brilliant game. I didn't think the first half was brilliant. It was a little bit flat, I thought, as a commentator. It was quite hard to get your teeth into, but it's just a remarkable achievement. And I feel sorry for Oxford because of I'd put them really on par with Coventry as probably the team I've enjoyed watching the most in League One. We've had Carl on the show. I like him. I think he is a very good manager. But the achievement is unbelievable. So I'd be lying if yesterday I wasn't really pleased when I woke up that they've been able to achieve this. I had that short spell there at the start of my career. And, you know, I've got a real affection for the club. And, you know, it wasn't non-league too many years ago. And it had that essence when I was there in the early noughties. And I think it was David Craig asked Gareth Ainsworth after the game if they're the new crazy gang. Well, there certainly is a bit of that about it. You know, such underdogs, obviously had nothing of the ball really in that game, but it's just the Wickham we've seen all season churning out results. So I thought it was a really good game plan. They did it, carried it out brilliantly in the first half, but you'd be lying, anyone who watched that game at 1-1, if you didn't believe that Oxford were probably going to go on and win that game, you'd be lying, because they were out on their feet. The only way they were going to get a goal, in my mind, was if Akinfenwa could flick one on, or Onyedinma could produce something, and it came from a mistake, and that's exactly what happened from, you know, a player in Onyedinma who Clarkie gave us some brilliant stats on last week. I thought I had a really poor game for him, but ultimately his sharpness and his anticipation gets Wickham into the Championship, which is just an outstanding story.
Adrian, I'm sure we've all seen the stats from after the game about, you know, Wickham in terms of possession and chances and stuff, but there's more than one way to win a football match, and that's kind of what they've been proving all season.
Of course, yeah. And we saw Northampton with a very different start. Well, a similar style to Wickham prevailed, didn't we, in the League Two playoff final. There's no right or wrong way to play the game. You play to your strengths, don't you? I thought Wickham were far and away the better side in the first half. They imposed their will on Oxford. And yes, they were clinging on. I mean, Oxford found their legs, I thought, after two ring-rusty playoff semi-finals and a poor first half by their standards. They gradually, they came into their own, particularly down the right-hand side, I thought, with Henry and Sykes causing a few problems. But yeah, ultimately, they probably did shade it on the day. And I just thought the outstanding performers were in the Wickham rear guard. Obviously, Joe Jacobson came up with the moments that mattered. But Anthony Stewart, I thought it was one of the great individual performances at Wembley. So many heroic interventions inside his own penalty box, and he scored a crucial goal, of course. So yeah, he was a hero. The playoffs, I wonder, just they fell in Wickham's favour. We know that it was controversial the way that they qualified for them, but they came up against two footballing sides, didn't they, in Fleetwood and Oxford, that kind of rely on sharp, fluent attacking football. And after that break, it just felt to me, watching those games, that they struggled to find a rhythm. And that certainly played into Wickham's hand, who they're just less reliant on having the same kind of fluency to their play. But look, kudos to them. Tremendous performance.
Well, last week we spoke to Joe Jacobson, who said corners are the new penalties. Well, on Monday night, he nailed both. So it's only right that we speak with him again. Joe, congratulations. You've had a couple of days to digest it now. Has it sunk in yet?
No, not really. It's all a bit strange still. I think the emotion and the excitement for winning the game was there, and it was apparent, and you kind of enjoy it because you know you've done something special on that day. But I think the magnitude of what we've done hasn't quite sunk in yet, and I don't think it will be until, you know, the fixtures are released and you're seeing who you're up against and who you're playing every week, where you kind of think, oh, wow, we're in this now and we've got to kind of deal with where we're going to be. But right now, everyone's just kind of just got this weird emotion of just buzzing, really. You haven't stopped smiling and talking to people and just being excited about it.
Joe, well done. I'm absolutely chuffed for you and everyone at the club. It's a club that I'm really fond of. I'm sure you are too, even though I only spent a few months at the club. I just want to ask you a bit about Gareth and that unbelievable spirit that you've got. Sometimes I think when people say that, it's a bit contrived, and having been a player myself, it's difficult to get real unity amongst the group. But knowing David Wheeler, he's told me a little bit about it. I mean, how does Gareth get you all so motivated? How does he keep the squad players happy as well? Is he someone that can just keep everyone with a smile on their face? Because I think that's the toughest job ultimately for a manager.
Yeah, the gaffer will come out himself and say his biggest kind of part of his job is his man management and the relationships he has with his players. And, you know, it's not rocket science what he wants us to do. He kind of just says, you know, he makes everyone's job and everyone's position quite simple, breaks it all down and kind of just says, right, do this for me and I'll be happy and you're going to play. There's never any pressure to get promotions, to achieve anything. It's just, He's even said it before the game in a meeting. He said, our job is just to get the best out of you guys and to make you guys the best players. And it's just nice having someone who kind of cares about you as well. He's created this culture I've talked about before about, you know, this. We've got such an open squad there. Anyone can talk to anyone about anything. And there's no kind of pressure about performing, you know, to get 3 points on a weekend. It's about kind of making you better people. And when he gives you that kind of platform to go and play, you can do nothing but enjoy playing football and wanting to be the best. And we do loads of little things around the training ground. Some days we won't even train. We'll do things just to kind of, they call them development days, just to develop us as human beings. And we get people in who do talks with us and things like that. And we've got a culture that I've never experienced in football before. And I think the more now people have been talking about it in the press and things, I think a lot more managers and teams are going to adapt this to their kind of way of doing things as well.
Yeah, that absolutely stood out, Joe, in terms of the celebrations, all as one. What I found fascinating as a viewer was seeing the cajoling from the sidelines with the subs, with the directors, Everyone associated with Wickham inside that ground was cheering and whooping and coaching from the sidelines. Very unusual, but a masterstroke, in my opinion. Did you take notice of that on the field?
I'd like to say it was all my idea. No, we actually spoke about it before the first Fleetwood game and said, look, there's no fans in here, but can we use the subs and the boys not involved and the guys in the stand to kind of create an atmosphere for us? And we kind of said, like, every tackle, every header, every shot, let's cheer it as if, you know, it's the best thing. It's like a goal. And as soon as that started, from the first minute away at Fleetwood, we had fans there. It was amazing. And we made sure that there was subs warming up the whole time, giving encouragement. And it helped us a lot. And the second game against Fleetwood, they definitely took that on board, because all of a sudden they had people dotted around the stadium shouting and giving us abuse and things going on like that. But even at Wembley, in this huge arena, we could hear the boys up in the stand who were not even close to the bench. We could hear them shouting and screaming and just giving us encouragement. And it helps a lot. I think if you ask the Oxford players, they would have heard it as well. And there wasn't much coming from their kind of side of it. But it's because we spoke about it, we tried to give ourselves every opportunity and use everything we could. And I think that was a huge, like you said, masterstroke from the gaffer to kind of get all the boys to jump on board. And they were so happy to do that. You know, they could have been disappointed being on the bench, but they were our biggest fans that day, and it helped us massively.
Oh yeah, your contract was due to expire this summer. Have you had any word on the new one? Presumably you had to sign a short-term extension for the playoffs.
Yes, I've had word, yeah. it's kind of getting sorted out. Nothing's been released or anything yet, but it looks like I'll be staying for a little while, yeah. That's all I'll say for now.
Joe, can you give us a little bit of insight into what those couple of hours after the final whistle were like? I think as you get a little bit older and more experienced, you can take those moments in. I know when I was a younger player, you pour as many beers down your neck as you can in the first hour and champagne's gone quick smart. So what was that like for you? And I understand you were going to have some kind of celebration back at the training ground as well. How was that?
Oh, it was awesome. Like you said, these kind of moments never happen. Some people never have these moments in football. They can have their whole career and never go through it. I've been fortunate that was my fourth promotion. So I've experienced little things, but I've never been on a pitch and won a Wembley kind of playoff final. And I didn't realise how good it was to do that. To have a one-off game, have the build-up and the emotion and everything that went with it was incredible. And like you said, the first thing you want to do is go and grab a beer in the changing room and celebrate with everyone. But there's press to do. There's people trying to drag you here and there and everywhere. And because our families weren't there, it was nice to go and, you know, all the boys start getting their parents and their wives and girlfriends on FaceTime. And there's a picture of me. I was just sat on the pitch on my own, just FaceTiming my parents, just being like, what have we done? This is ridiculous. And I was giving tours to family of the changing rooms. It was going off. I think in the end, Wembley, actually, the people there had to kick us out. We were, I think, overstayed our welcome a little bit. And they were telling us to kind of, right, we've got to clean up and we've got to get ready for whatever's coming next. And some of the boys didn't even have time to shower after the game. So we went back to the training ground. They're still in their full kit with their medals around their heads. And yeah, it was good fun. Like you said, we first of all, we went back to the training ground. We had to kind of empty the kit off the coach like we do every game and all the equipment. And once we did that, the coach took us down to Marlow and there was a little venue open for us where we just kind of had a few beers and just sat there talking about what we've done and the magnitude of it. And it was nice just having kind of the players and the staff, a couple of directors who have been with us all the way to enjoy it with. And then when they kicked us out, we went back to the stadium and that kind of went on until, people started drifting off. There's photos of the boys still on the pitch at Wickham at, you know, 5 or 6 in the morning when the sun was out. And I think we've had the WhatsApp group still going off and the boys today are still in their shirts with their medals around their necks, just, you know, going to the shops and things like that. It's amazing what it does to you.
Last one before we let you go, 2015 and the pain of that day. I'm guessing what happened on Monday night more than makes up for that for you.
Yeah, I've had bad experiences in playoffs. I've been sent off in one. I've missed the final through a lone running out that we won. The final of 2015, losing on penalties and coming so close was heartbreaking. And I was desperate this time to kind of right a few of those wrongs. And if there's ever a time to kind of do it on the biggest stage for me in my career and for the club to make history, yeah, it kind of it makes all the those other things that have gone on to me, you know, just go away completely. And yeah, I'm just so thankful that I've been able to experience something like that in football. Like I said before, people don't get to experience these things, and to go through it with your mates and people that you've been kind of grafting with for so long. It would be nice to have the families there and stuff, but they're all watching at home, having their own little parties, and to do it is so special for those guys as well, who have sacrificed so much for us. Look, I'm just, yeah, still buzzing that it's all happened, and yeah, going to enjoy the next few weeks for sure.
Joe Jacobson there. As for Oxford, Clarkie, Carl Robinson concerned that his team are going to be picked apart. Do you think that's likely? We might see some of them in the Championship next season regardless.
Well, they've already lost a couple, haven't they? Rob Dickey, I think, has been a very influential player. He was good across the playoffs, I felt, and came close to scoring, didn't he, a couple of times at Wembley. He's someone that I imagine will be on the radar of Championship clubs. I mean, in terms of some of their other star men, they're not that young anymore. So maybe they'll be able to hold on to a few of them. I have to wait and see. They're a fantastic team, Oxford. They just couldn't get up to speed quickly enough to prevail in the short, sharp playoff format. I think it's almost as simple as that. The fact that we had the pandemic halted their momentum, and they just couldn't quite pick it up in time. But yeah, look, they'll have regrets. They didn't bring their A game to the table in the final. But yeah, they'll come again. I'd imagine even if they do lose one or two, they'll still be up there next season challenging for promotion again.
Do you agree with that, Sam? We have seen there can be a bit of a hangover from teams beaten in the playoff final the following season, so they'll have to shake that as quickly as they can.
I think it's going to be tough for them. I think Brannigan will be a big miss as well if he goes. I think he really makes them tick. And I think his position in the second half, actually, just the two attacking midfield players really pushed on and meant that Wickham retreated. So, yeah, him along with Dickey will be a blow. I'm not sure if there won't be some clubs that may have a look at Carl Robinson again as well. So that will be interesting. And next year, League One is going to be so challenging. Swindon, Plymouth, Crewe, you would imagine all those clubs will consolidate at least. And then you look at Ipswich, Sunderland, Portsmouth. That's just off the top of my head. There's some huge clubs at that level that have probably not done themselves justice over the last 12 months. And with the pre-season, new recruits, I think it will be tough for Oxford to emulate what they've done this year. Yeah, it might be another playoff campaign, or it might be a bit of a rebuild for Carl or a new manager.
While we're here talking teams in the playoffs, bit of news which broke on Tuesday. John McGreal has been sacked by Colchester after 4 years in charge. That despite leading the U's to both the League Cup quarterfinals and the playoffs. Whilst in League One, better news, AFC Wimbledon have secured a £4 million loan that will ensure they can complete the construction of their new stadium at Plough Lane. OK, League One and League Two, it's been quite the season. Thanks for that. Now the Championship takes centre stage.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis Adams. Listen to it totally ad-free on The Athletic.
Before we chat Champo, let's insert our new weekly quiz into its new slot. If you've missed the last few shows, I asked Sam and Adrian questions about their careers. They complain about the questions and then Clarkie wins. Adrian, as you're 2-0, you get the right to go first again. Here's your question this week. Adrian, your first appearance of the 95-96 season for Arsenal came against Southampton in December of 1995. Playing for the Saints that day was one of Sam's old gaffers. Can you name that manager?
Sam's old gaffers.
Can I steal?
Blimey.
Let's give Adrian a couple more seconds.
Man. No, I can't remember. I can't remember too many of the Saints players. I remember Letizia was on the side, but and Francis Benali. But I'm pretty sure neither of those have managed Sam. So no, I'm gonna have to pass on this one, I'm afraid.
For the steel parking,
Paul Tisdale.
I was going for Jim McGill.
Was it Jim?
Yeah.
You can't even get those right, Sam, can you?
That's embarrassing.
Well, look, let's see if you do any better with your own question.
Oh, no.
Sam. This should be an easy one, okay? You get your first points on the board here, I hope. How many goals did you score whilst on loan at Oldham between March and May 2001?
Considering I remember every single goal I scored, that would be three.
Yeah, it is. You can have an imaginary bonus point if you can tell me when the goals came.
I can tell you who they're against.
Yeah.
Two away at Swansea and one at home to Stoke.
Correct. A 2-1 win and a 2-1 defeat. Well, that's made that interesting for next week. Enough frivolities, though, to the Championship. Championship headlines, Wigan. That's the headline. The subtext being, what do you do when every goal and every point could be crucial in your battle for survival? You beat a fellow basement battler 8-0. Eight. Ocho. Wheat. Act. Elsewhere in the bid to beat the drop, Luton were held to a 1-1 draw by QPR and Borough beat Reading. Whilst at the top, West Brom edged closer to an automatic promotion place with a goalless draw with Fulham. Cardiff all but ended Derby's hopes of playoff fun, whilst Millwall are on the march after their win against Blackburn put them on the fringes of the top six. The EFL have provided the following update read the transfer window. A statement reads, subject to formal ratification, the transfer window will open fully on Monday the 27th of July. The window for international registrations closes at 11 p.m. on Monday the 5th of October with an agreement in place with the Premier League for an extended two-week domestic-only window which will close at 5 p.m. on Friday the 16th of October. Meanwhile, Calvin Phillips won't be making any more appearances for Leeds this season. He's got a knee knock. And off the pitch, Pep and City have mutually agreed to leave each other's company. That's Clotet and Birmingham, to be clear. To Tuesday night's fixtures, and there's only one place to start. Better get in line. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Forwards. And it's a wonderful finish. An eighth goal for Wigan. And that's the best of them all. It's a hat-trick for Kieran Dow.
Wigan 8, Hull City 0. As of Wednesday morning, Wigan 12 points above the relegation zone, having equaled the biggest win in Championship history. As for Hull, remember when they banned the local paper for being too negative? Let's talk about Wigan, though, Adrian. I mean, they're amazing, aren't they? 12 points clear as we record, 10 clean sheets in 11. I sort of had them down to win this game, but not be 7-0 up by half-time.
Well, if Wigan were in playoff contention right now, you'd probably put them and Brentford as almost nailed on to South through to a Wembley showpiece. They're playing that well at the moment. We're getting so solid, as you rightly say, defensively. And in this game, everything clicked, didn't it, going forward? Real pace, energy going forward. None of the goals were, well, one strike from outside the box was a phenomenal hit. But most of them were just good pieces of team play inside the final third, you know, getting into good areas, delivering quality into the box and finishing it with aplomb. I thought it was outstanding. Obviously, Dow's hat-trick was brilliant, but so too Jamal Lowe got a hat-trick of assists. Byrne from right back gets a hat-trick of assists. Special individual performances. But I think it's the speed of their play and the relentlessness of their appetite to go out and destroy Hull City that spoke volumes really for what Paul Cook has got going there at Wigan. So no, yeah, good luck to them. And look, it's a possibility now. I'd say almost a strong possibility that they can take 12 points off them and they'll still survive. And that will be, you know, that will be a big relief and much deserved to those in the dressing room.
Sam, we spoke last week about your experience of playing for a club in administration. The mentality of these Wigan players is pretty phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're doing brilliantly. I think they were written off probably before Christmas and went on a brilliant run. And obviously, they've started like a house on fire since the restart. But in all departments, there's no point in enlisting the players. I think in every area of the pitch, they're at the top of the game at the moment. You have to say that watching the goals back and the highlights this morning, the defending was so passive from Hull City. You know, balls going into the box, feeble attempts at winning headers and not staying with runners. But, I mean, that goes without saying when you're defeated 8-0 when you're 7-0 down at half-time. So they've given themselves a great opportunity, but nothing's decided yet. The games at the weekend are mouth-watering. in terms of Wigan at Charlton and obviously Hull taking on Luton. So it's done them the world of good, especially the goal difference. I think they were the second lowest scorers in the league prior to that last night. So showed you that, yes, they clearly played wonderfully well, but still a little bit of a freak result against a side that are very much down in the doldrums. But yeah, don't take anything away from Wigan. Paul Cook's done a magnificent job.
Yeah, Hull not so good. 50 goals conceded in 2020 for them. West Brom 0, Fulham 0. Clarkey, if Albion win their last two at Huddersfield and home to QPR, they go up automatically. Would you expect them to do that?
Oh, no. Having seen them several times of late, I've not been overly impressed with them. Playing a little bit with the handbrake on. I don't think that they're creating enough quality chances. They're putting balls into the box, but the quality of those final balls hasn't been on the money. Charlie Austin very quiet last night. No, I wouldn't bank on them. Certainly Huddersfield away. Huddersfield are not exactly flying at the moment, but got plenty of motivation to upset the odds. And QPR, actually, I think QPR with nothing to play for are actually more dangerous than a QPR that might be under pressure. And I say that because they've got such free and easy players in forward areas. They can just, you know, Eze, Chair, the likes, Bright Samuel. These young players could just literally go out there and have fun and express themselves with nothing to lose. And I think that might make them dangerous opposition, albeit if their defence can hold out at the other end, of course, which is easier said than done. So no, I don't think West Brom are playing well enough to guarantee 6 points here. I was disappointed with Fulham, by the way. I think I was looking at it, I was just, the longer the second half went on, I was thinking they'll show some urgency in a minute. They'll change things and we'll see a bit of ambition. Surely they'll throw caution to the wind. This is a game where a victory can turn things around for them. And there was none of it. It was just sort of one-paced all the way to the final whistle, which, if I was a Fulham fan, would have annoyed me.
Yeah, Fulham now requiring snookers really to go automatically. At the bottom, big win for Middlesbrough. They beat Reading 2-1 at the Madstad. Meanwhile, Sam, you were in Wales for Cardiff's win against Derby. Big one for Neil Harris' team, probably the end of Derby's playoff hopes. What were your takeaways from the match? Some pretty lamentable defending from the visitors from the highlights I saw.
Yeah, individual mistakes for Derby once more. It's been a feature of the season. Obviously, Ben Hamer, the goalkeeper, in the last match against Brentford. And last night, two really poor mistakes. Knight with the first one, and obviously Wayne Rooney dispossessed for Lee Tomlin's winner. So that's what they'll look back on, I think, as being their Achilles heel. Obviously, things going on off the pitch, maybe a bit of a lack of a consistent striker, but I think individual errors is probably what's cost Derby. What I am seeing, if I touch on them first, is a team that are picking up Philip Cocu's methods, and I think given time and with some new signings, this could actually prove to be a decent appointment. I've seen the improvement in their play for a period last night in the first half. They kept the ball for what seemed an age. Sibley looks like an absolutely brilliant young player, just receives the ball on the half turn, always wanting to attack defenders, two-footed, can go past people. They just lacked someone maybe to get beyond Chris Martin, a bit of a lack of pace.
Sam, isn't it? That is the absolute striking deficiency in that team, is they can't stretch teams.
Yeah, and when they were chasing the game 2-1 down, he brought Marriott on to partner Martin and played Josephson wide on the left-hand side, Tom Lawrence as a number 10, and didn't play anyone on the right-hand side. Just allowed Bogle, who was a substitute, to hopefully bomb up and down that side. And that was the tactic, but it didn't work at all because Mendes Lang is in such good form at the moment that he just pushed Bogle back in the last 20 minutes. So it finished without the urgency you'd expect with so much on the game. And Cardiff really impressed me last night. You know, I went into the game after seeing them at Fulham and thinking they'd be robust and direct and utilise the long throws and the corners, but they were anything but. I think that was because Derby gave them a bit too much respect, and Cardiff actually were encouraged by that and played a bit more than I've seen them of recent times. And Marlon Pack got on the ball, and Tomlin was the sprinkling of gold dust that he's been so often in his career. Those two players were the difference last night for Cardiff, and really in the box seat now in terms of that final promotion, that final playoff position.
Also on Tuesday, 1-1 between Luton and QPR at Kenilworth Road. We'll talk more about that match later. Sheffield Wednesday 0, Huddersfield 0. Wonder if that away point will be good enough for Cowley and Kotov. Last two for them against Millwall and West Brom. And speaking of Millwall, they beat Blackburn by a 1-0 at the Den. They've got QPR away and Huddersfield at home. Cardiff, who they are one of the teams vying with for sixth place, have Middlesbrough away and Hull at home. At the moment, Adrian, and it's tough to say this on Wednesday lunchtime when there's games on Wednesday and Thursday, but I'm going to make you pick anyway. Who's your choice for sixth place?
Yeah, I think Cardiff will do it because they have Hull on the final day of the season. And hand on heart, I think Middlesbrough, although they got a good result up at Reading, Middlesbrough's home form is not great, and I could see Cardiff picking something up there, maybe enough to get over the line. But look, credit Millwall. I mean, they have kept their chase going longer than I thought they would, and Gary Rowett, the organisation of his team, the way that he can stifle talented opponents. We saw it recently with Swansea for a period of that game where he completely negated their talented forward players. And Blackburn last night, a team that, okay, they're a bit hit and miss, but they've got quality going forward. They barely had a sniff of goal at Millwall, and a lot of that is the way that Rowett plans and the way that he sets his team up. So yeah, he's given Millwall fans something to believe in. I just think Cardiff will scrape over, and I also think Cardiff, the way that they're playing under Neil Harris, of course Harris potentially can deny his former club that last berth. I just think Cardiff are playing a good blend of football. They've retained a lot of the qualities they had under Warnock, but added more football. And I think that they're quite an all-round side at the moment.
You agreeing with that, Sam? It's going to be Cardiff for sixth?
Just about, yeah. I thought a fortnight ago that Cardiff and Millwall had the best fixtures, and that's how it's played out. But obviously Swansea and Bristol City play tonight. Bristol City have somehow got themselves two results, so you can't discount them or Preston at this point. But yeah, I just think with Middlesbrough pretty much safe after last night, Cardiff City probably need a point there, and they'll be confident that they can beat Hull City at home on the final day.
As we say, games on Wednesday and Thursday of this week. Once they're done, there are but two rounds to go. We'll look ahead to the final fixtures next.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
Before we get to the weekend, let's talk Luton Town and what their chances of survival are with someone who knows a lot more about them than we do. She's a woman of many hats and a fan of the Hatters. It's Talk Sports and Sky Sports, Faye Carruthers.
Faye, it's been a bit of a tough year in the Championship for Luton. How have you found it as a supporter?
Stressful. Very stressful. But to be honest, we weren't really expecting to do anything amazing this season. We thought if we can finish mid-table, that would be great. And that's how we thought it was going to pan out. And then we just had such a poor run of results. And, you know, it ultimately didn't work out with Graham Jones at the helm. I feel like we've got a bit of impetus back again with NJ back. So, you know, two games to salvage things.
It was a bit of a familiar story, though, on Tuesday against QPR 1-1, failing to hold on to a lead. Do you think that's going to be costly?
Yeah, I mean, we've made a lot of costly mistakes this season. Defensively, we've not been good enough. You know, we have let in a lot of late goals. It's incredibly frustrating. However, it's something that we're going to learn, and it's something to be expected in this league. It's not, you know, we had that problem at times in League One as well. I don't know what it is about the players switching off, but certainly that's something that we're going to have to work on, and we cannot afford to do that in the last two games. This is now crucial.
The first of those last two games is a big one up against Hull City next. 3-0 in the reverse to Hull, but judging by Tuesday night's performance from Hull, you're probably feeling a little bit more confident.
Oh, do you know what? I'm not, though. That's the worst thing. So I am a positive person. You know I am most definitely an optimist, not a pessimist. However, I could really have done without Wigan doing exactly that, because you tend to get a response back, don't you? I was trying to think what Southampton's response was to that 9-0 defeat to Leicester, and I think they lost their next two games and then rallied. So I'm hoping that that's the case. I also, no offence to Grant McCann, because I really like the guy, but you know, I was hoping they weren't going to sack him as well, because I don't want a kind of new manager, assistant manager bounce that teams tend to get either. I don't know if it's a good or bad time to face them. I would say, and I feel really harsh saying this, if we cannot beat Hull, having watched them capitulate against Wigan, then we don't deserve to stay up. But I really think we'll beat them.
Go on then, head versus heart. Where are Luton finishing?
Just above the relegation zone. We're going to do it.
Faker Ruthers, Hatter and reporter there. For the weekend end, the penultimate round, the round that could see so much decided, the round that we've all been waiting for, the last weekend round of the Championship season 2019-20. Phew. Let's have a look at some of the games then. We'll start at the top. Adrian, you've got an eye on Derby versus Leeds, a game which could have been a massive one, but it might all be sewn up by this point.
It could be, yeah. But if it isn't, then I would anticipate Leeds sewing up in this fixture. And I just think it's kind of, there's a little bit of irony there, isn't there, that cast your mind back a year with Lampard and Spygate and everything that went on, the way that Derby came back in that playoff semi-final to kill Leeds United's promotion dreams. You know, how much has changed? You know, no Lampard, he's at Chelsea. Derby rebuilding with younger players of their own this time rather than loanees. And Bielsa, the constant, still doing the same things that he did last year and improving, I have to say. And yeah, I just think that this is the match that they'll probably seal it with. Hernandez turned into a super sub. We know how superstitious Bielsa can be. And it's just worked lately, hasn't it, with having Hernandez on the bench and then bringing him on usually at half time to come on and make the difference. So yeah, it's I've been impressed. I think they've played some good football, fast football. They look super fit, the Leeds United players. And providing they don't slip up against Barnsley in the match on Thursday night, then I can see them sealing the deal at Derby. Should be a good one.
Sam, Swansea versus Bristol City, a big game whenever it's played, given the hostilities between the two clubs and their supporters. But this one could be a massive one, depending on how Swansea get on at Forest on Wednesday. They've still got a chance of making it into the playoffs too.
Yeah, and Bristol City against Stoke tonight. So a lot depends on that, but it probably looks like it's going to be win or bust for both of those two teams come the weekend. Both teams changing their shape in recent games and weeks. Swansea, I thought, were pretty good against Leeds. Closed them down. High intensity pressing from Brewster and Ayew in particular. Defensively as well, Gerhi, after a bit of a horrible start to life at Swansea, seems to have rediscovered the form and showing the player that we know he can be, Matt, from watching him at Chelsea for all these years. But I suppose the story here is Bristol City and Lee Johnson leaving his position, Dean Holden taking over temporarily and getting two wins from two and just simplifying things. Again, it's a 3-5-2, but Vyman and Patterson playing as number eights, I think, has been a masterstroke. You know, Corey Smith can anchor that midfield, allowing those two to go and be really creative. And they're looking very good attack-wise. Naki Wells as well, amongst the goals in the last few games. And I just think that they're looking better in this shape. He's brought Benkovic back in defensively. So it's been a really good start to life for Dean Holden. And I'm sure the supporters are pleased. It may be too little too late, but it should be a really free-flowing, attack-minded game with what's at stake. You'd expect goals.
Adrian, you've also been looking at Preston against Birmingham. Preston may be long shots for the playoffs now, but for Birmingham, this is all getting a bit messy, isn't it? Managers left, they're not a million miles away from the bottom three themselves.
Well, it's all been a bit shambolic, let's be honest, at St Andrews. But huge game, by the way, before the weekend, Birmingham entertaining Charlton. Now, Lee Bowyer, a former Blues player, of course, touted with the job. You know, he's one of those names linked with replacing Clatet. So that would be a fascinating match. I'd actually, you know, look, the way the teams are playing, you'd probably fancy Charlton to nick something there, which would make it even bigger for Birmingham at Preston. It's just been a mess, hasn't it? Obviously, with Clatet announcing he was leaving at the end of the season and then getting sacked because of poor results. Winless in 11, failed to score, by the way, in four of their last five away games. Hogan just hasn't got going at all since the restart, so that's an issue. But yeah, I just looked at it, and with the two caretakers, it couldn't have been a worse start for them. Steve Spooner and Craig Gardner. So you take the reins from Pep Clatet, you go to Stoke, who have just been battered by Leeds, and you change the system. You go to three at the back. You chuck in a kid, Nico Gordon, as part of that back three. You put Wes Harding at left wing back, which it feels like an alien position in my view. You drop Crowley and Bella, 12 assists between them, and you get beaten 2-0, and it's a miserable, miserable performance. And also one thing that stood out for me was with the changes during that game. Three pretty much untried youngsters came on ahead of more experienced names. So it was just really weird. And as caretaker gaffers, and I don't want to, you know, say that they're out of their depth, but Steve Spooner and Craig Gardner did not have a good debut. So I'm fascinated to see what their response will be against Charlton and ultimately in this game at Preston. And Preston have seemed like they've stopped the rot and have got players that were out of the side in form. There's a bit more competition for places now. So I think Preston are at it and Birmingham aren't. So they're in big, big trouble, I think, Birmingham. And potentially it could get worse if the EFL dish out a punishment as well.
Yeah, we'll wait and see on that one. Briefly, Sam, on Huddersfield v West Brom. We've spoken about West Brom. Huddersfield, no wins in eight, but always obdurate. You can see this one being ground out to a 0-0, 1-1 draw kind of thing, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. I mean, if we cast our minds back, I think Danny Cowley's first game was at West Brom for Huddersfield. They lost 4-2 on that day. It's not going to be like that. I've got the commentator's stat for you, Matt, because I know you like doing this.
Mm.
They haven't scored for four games in a bit, I've written down. 379 minutes. Why do commentators always do that? 379 minutes since they last scored, Huddersfield, and Clarkey touched on West Brom earlier. A little bit limp in an attack, a lack of threat. Robson Carney doesn't look like he's going to get a goal. Charlie Austin a little bit on his heels, I felt, against Fulham, not making those darting runs in the box. So yeah, it's going to be really tight. They're devoid of attacking intent, Huddersfield. They've not scored from open play in one of the last eight games. They've only scored from open play, in one of the last eight games. So that just shows you exactly where they're at. I would suggest it'll be 0-0, or West Brom will get that goal, probably through Pereira or Dean Garner, who are their two best chances of goals, and get the job done. But it's probably going to be a hard watch. And Danny Cowley, you know, needs probably to show some improved performances before the end of the season, because I don't think the supporters seem won over at the moment.
In terms of the final round of games, they all kick off at 7:30 PM UK time. That's on Wednesday next week, the 22nd of July. It means we'll be dropping next week's show a little later than usual so we can reflect on those final games. And there are plenty of standout fixtures, lots of them involving teams trying to stay up, like Adrian. Cardiff against Hull. At this stage, given what's happened, but before they play Luton, is it difficult to make a case for Hull staying up?
Yeah, I just don't see it. No, I think Luton have got something going under Nathan Jones. They were slightly fortunate, by all accounts, to cling on for a draw against QPR. So that is a slight concern, but the morale at Hull City looks so low, and the body language of the players, I did notice it. And then they're getting no favours, by the way, from the local media. I couldn't resist looking at the Hull Daily Mail's player ratings from the 8-0 demolition that weekend, and they tagged it as their lowest ever in the history of the newspaper ratings. Basically, all of the players got between a 2 and a 4 out of 10. So morale will be low. I can see Cardiff, especially under Neil Harris, who's a good motivational manager. I can see him being pretty ruthless and Cardiff swatting the Tigers aside. And I think Hull will go down. Who goes down with them? Well, I mean, who knows at this stage? So much can change between now and our next podcast on the pitch, but also, let's be honest, off the pitch as well, if the EFL pull their finger out and decide on what they're going to do sanction-wise.
Yeah, that could change everything. I'm just looking at these final fixtures, Sam. Leeds v Charlton is one that that stands out. You've obviously got Charlton connections, mates with Johnny Jackson. Lee Bowie is number two. I just wonder if they'll be hoping that Leeds get promotion wrapped up ASAP, because it becomes a completely different prospect going to Elland Road when maybe the Leeds players have been out the night before or a couple of days before, as it is to playing them when they are desperate for the points.
Yeah, they'll be hoping they take lead of how the Liverpool lads enjoyed themselves, conducted themselves, and then got smashed at Manchester City in the subsequent game. So, yeah, there could be something in that. But, you know, obviously a lot hinges on the next couple of games for Charlton. I believe that Barnsley are probably gone, given the fixtures. Leeds, Forest and Brentford, obviously, to come. I think it's going to be difficult for Hull City off the back of that result last night, and when you consider the fixtures and, you know, looking at what Wigan have got left, I think the final side is probably going to go down on goal difference. So I'm talking one of Luton, Charlton or Wigan. And as it stands, Luton have got a lot of work to do in that regard. So unfortunately, if you were putting me on the spot, they're probably the three I would go for, with Wigan and Charlton just escaping by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah, Wigan hosting Fulham last day. We've spoken a fair bit about both those two. Mm. I just wonder, Adrian, with Fulham, are they going to be in good enough form to get through the playoffs? Does that even matter? It feels like they're really up and down kind of team.
Well, they're not in disastrous form. They're not playing to their potential, in my opinion. They're relatively tight at the back. They're not leaking goals, but they're not scoring very many goals, are they? And you just look at their team and you expect more. And tactically, I'll go back to it, I expect a bit more from Scott Parker. There's no gear change. I want to see a bit more aggression, determination at times. Maybe, I mean, they went slightly more direct, I noticed, against West Brom, but very few counter-attacks. They're not great on the transition. It's just all a bit samey for me with Fulham, who possibly, I suppose, if it's looking like they'll be in one of those middle teams in the playoffs, might end up with Nottingham Forest, and I could see those two legs, if they occur, being quite cagey, tactical, low scoring affairs. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. If West Brom blow it, by the way, and Brentford with Barnsley on the last day could put Barnsley down, could nick that second spot. If West Brom end up in the playoffs, you just wonder whether they're, you know, how their morale will be, because I think mentally they'll be on their knees. Slaven Bilic will have to do a sensational job of lifting them to go again in the playoffs. So I would suggest that the playoffs will be wide open.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. A couple of rounds of games, and we're going to have plenty to talk about on next week's show. Right, Abby, give us some odds on the championship per William Hill's prices at the time of recording. Who are the outright favourites to win the league?
Well, it'll be no surprise to hear that Leeds are 1-14 to win the whole league. West Brom 10-1, and if you have, I mean, why would you? Brentford 25-1.
How about to make the top six? I see Forest are all but nailed on. What about some of the outsiders?
All but nailed on. We're looking at Cardiff and Millwall. Cardiff are 2-5 to make the top six. Millwall 5-1, but further in than Millwall are Swansea. We haven't mentioned them as being outside as a potential top sixes, but they, according to William Hill, are 4-1. And Matt, you'll be glad to hear that, having been 5-1 last week, Derby are now 150-1.
I think I speak for all of us when I say how about the odds for promotion? Wow, Leeds 1-500, I see. Is there anybody that might be a bit better value?
I mean, it's all pretty much nailed on, according to William Hill, because Leeds, West Brom and Brentford are all odds on to be promoted. So if you wanted Nottingham Forest as your outside bet, that's 11-2. Fulham 2-1, Cardiff 9-1, Swansea 25-1. There are no odds, I must say, on relegation, because, as we have mentioned, literally anything could happen between now and the end. There's a lot of points deductions that we are expecting. So no odds on William Hill on relegation.
Thanks, Abby. Right, that's just about it for this week's show. Before we go, though, let's talk drubbings. I want to know the biggest win our two former ballers played in and how did you celebrate? Sam, I'm imagining a big win is only a big win for a striker if you're on the score sheet.
Yeah, pretty much. I can't recall anything above six. I remember beating Notts County 5-0 with Swindon and beating Southend 6-0. During my 3 years, but I can't think of anything higher than that, I'm afraid. Will that do?
In terms of your celebrations, I guess like a 5-0 against Notts County on a random game, you're not going to go mad about that like you would do a 1-0 against Oxford, are you? So does it make that much of a difference to you how much you win by, or is it just kind of making you feel good and bragging rights?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, you'd have a good feeling within the squad and at the training ground the following week, but it doesn't, I don't think, alter your plans that evening or over the course of the weekend. That said, it probably meant that I would have gone out in Swindon that evening. The lads used to obviously try and persuade me because I was still living at home at that time with my mum's, but it would normally mean a little trip to one of those vast Tesco's where I'd spend 20 quid on an outfit, and much to everyone's amusement, and then go out and enjoy the bright lights of Swindon. So that's what we normally do. Go and get the beers and the pizza, and I get a naff pair of jeans and a pair of trainers and a bit of knitwear, all for under a score.
Clarkie, did you used to celebrate big wins by buying supermarket clothes?
I can't quite get my head around that. No, I really didn't. There weren't that many big wins, to be perfectly honest. I'm really having to rack my brain. Certainly not during my EFL career. A few fives and sixes for Stevenage. Arsenal, I mean, we racked up a few sixes in pre-season friendlies. But I don't know, I think the bigger the win, the less likely I'd have been to celebrate, because it's one of those where you sort of like, it's not that exciting, is it? It's a little bit like, well, yeah, we won, but it was a pretty easy game. Let's move on. I don't think players in general go overboard if you tonk someone. It's more like the unexpected victories that you like to celebrate. I remember one game at Plymouth. I think we went there and won 3-2. Obviously, it's a beast of a journey. I was playing for Southend, and I think it was Alvin Martin was the manager, and he sanctioned the supermarket stop off. Sam will know about these, where you can sort of basically just load up on crates of booze. And the time we got to Roots Hall, players were falling off the coach. It was quite disturbing, but it was a cracking journey. The journey went much faster than it normally does when you play Plymouth away.
Good stuff. Next time we meet, the championship season will be over and we'll be with you on Thursday, that's the 23rd of July, to review it all. Oh, and then we'll look ahead to the playoffs, because it's not over yet. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta, and be sure to check out our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Muddy Knees Media.